I'm glad you're here, and I'm glad you kind of moved to the things you can see. I'm using an overhead transparency projector, and this class will not work if you don't talk. Now, I was at yesterday's Bible study, and I was at Alan's class, and when he'd ask a question, there was just silence. If that happens, this isn't going to be much fun. So it's a class where I'm going to be doing the teaching, yes, but it's really a class that we need your input. And so I will ask that of you. In this medieval tool that I'm going to show you in a second was used in churches, sometimes made of mosaics, sometimes carved. And of course, in the Middle Ages, people were illiterate. And so how was the clergy and the scholar, how were the scholars going to teach people about things? Well, they made mosaics on the walls or carved things into the walls of the cathedrals. And of course, later we know they put them in windows, stained glass windows, to show, for example, the life of Christ. So this is a tool that was used back then. We don't know a whole lot about it. My colleague mentor and boss at the hospital I work at, I'm a hospital chaplain at Genesis Medical Center in Davenport, Iowa, and she found it on the internet, and it was so amazing to me, and I'm a visual person, so I like to see things, and I thought it was so cool that I said, if you'll give me a copy of that, I will never teach it in the Quad Cities, but I want to take it to Holden because it's such a neat teaching tool. And I have been teaching it here ever since and in other places where I'm not overlapping with my boss and mentor. So in a second, I'm going to show you this tool, and we're just going to talk about it. It's going to be interesting because every time I teach this class, something new kind of comes forward because you're all seeing it through your own eyes and your own experiences. So I will be showing that to you. It's a spiritual tool, and it's a psychological tool, and it's a tool of change. And as I asked the chaplain, mentor, Eric? Yeah, to say this morning, any of you who have had difficulties in life, or in the middle of difficulties in life, or might have some difficulties in life, this might be for you. So this is what we're going to be looking at. And I have to tell you, it looks blurry, but that's because it is. And we found it, when we found it, and she found it on the internet, this was the copy that she got. Now she's gone back and can't find another copy. It's not even out there. So do your best to kind of see what we have here. And for the first couple of minutes, I think I'll turn the big lights off so that you can see it a little better, but then I don't like to teach in the dark. And I can't see my notes. Does that help a little?
Yeah.
Okay. What we're going to do is take these characters one at a time and look at them. So what I want you to do first is look at the character at the top, the very top, and tell me what you see. King. Give me the feelings that you see.
King.
King, okay?
Christly.
Pardon me?
Christly.
Christly, okay?
The crown.
Giving a blessing.
Hand up for sure. Might be holding a
scepter.
Okay. What are the feelings you get about how this person feels about him or herself?
Bias.
Pardon me?
Bias.
Okay. Okay. Bias. All right.
Authoritative.
Authoritative. What else?
This person is very secure.
Very secure. What else?
Serious.
There's actually kind of a smile on this person's face, even though it's hard to see. What else do you see?
Older.
Could be. Yeah. Hard to see on here. It could be any age, actually. Hopefully that's kind of universal. Any other feelings that you get?
I don't like it.
Say it again?
I don't like it. It's creepy to me when I first saw it.
Oh, okay. All right. Now, when I tell you what it represents, it's going to be interesting. Is this person sitting? Can you see him sitting on a bench?
He's sitting on a throne or a bench.
Okay. Is he holding on to anything?
His scepter.
No.
He looks bored.
Bored? Okay. Actually, it's a smile. Trust me, it's a smile. It might be a smirky smile, but it's a smile.
I guess I would say he. It could be a she.
It could be he, could be she. Kind of, yeah. Okay. We get a lot of different feelings here as we look at it, and again, for those of you who just came in, I'm sorry it's not clear. We got this off the internet, it's not there anymore. We can't get a more clear picture. The person at the top who's sitting very balanced on a throne-like thing, happens to be smiling, but you can't really see that, happens to be somewhat smug, and is entitled happiness. He, she is on top of the world, everything is looking good, in control, and at the top of his or her game. That's what that one is supposed to represent. You may need to tweak your view of this individual on the top. Okay, this is the wheel of life. For those of you who just came in, and the wheel is always going to turn. And the wheel is going to turn clockwise. So this is the character, and that's really blurry. But tell me what you see and what you feel and the characteristics in that particular character on the right side. And by the way, I have a hearing loss, and so I need you to speak up, because since I can't see your faces, I'm a hearing aid, but I can't always read your lips, I can't hear you, so just be particularly articulate.
He looks like he's afraid of falling.
He is afraid of falling and clinging.
Clinging for dear life.
Looks like a child.
Okay, I will tell you this, it's the same person. Okay. In all the instances, it is the same person. So falling, holding on, clinging, anything else?
Going down.
Yeah. Going down. Okay, going down.
Head first.
Head first. Is that scary?
Yeah.
That is really scary. Okay, anything else? Is the seat gone? Balance? How about the balance?
Oh, right.
Gone?
No crown.
Thank you.
That's right.
Anything else?
Anxiety written into the face.
Anxiety. I'm glad you can see that. It is. If you see it on paper, it is even more so. Okay.
Wide-eyed.
Yeah.
It's the same person as the one with the crown?
Yes. All these positions are the same
except
person.
Except the one turning the wheel is not the same person.
We're not going to talk about that one yet. That one's not the same. Thank you for passing out, Bill. These four characters on the wheel are the same person. Not the one in the middle, and we're not going to talk about the one in the middle yet.
I have a little bit of help with the fuzziness when I realize it's probably a tapestry.
It could be a tapestry too.
It could be a tapestry
or a mosaic. That's why it's not exactly here. It might be clear if it was a tapestry. Yeah.
Why the different sizes?
Say that again?
The different sizes of the figure, if it's the same person, different stages of life, or
that's what we're gonna get to, right. Right.
That one is
it's all about change. Same person, change.
That one is fully clothed. The next one.
Okay, we'll get to the next one. Okay. All right, we'll go to the next one then, all right. The wheel turns, always clockwise. What do you see about this one at the bottom? Same person. Not clothed.
Hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, what else?
Your layers are stripped away.
The what?
Your layers are stripped away.
And what do you feel like when the layers of your life are stripped away?
Can't even hold the head in the... In a good position. It's just hanging down.
This kind of represents the muck of life. Even though it's kind of pretty, it's dark in the picture. Dark and murky and mucky. Kind of a muck of life.
The eyes are still wide.
The eyes are very wide. Fear? Would you say fear?
Yeah.
Okay.
The first picture, the person is looking into the wheel, and this one, the picture is looking out.
Yeah. So this one on top is kind of... confident. The one at the bottom doesn't look confident at all, does it?
But if he hangs on, the only way is up.
All right.
But does he or she know that at this point?
Right.
Maybe not.
Well, interesting. All right, we'll talk about that. Bring that back up. All right, now the wheel's going to turn. This person is vulnerable, almost naked. There's kind of a little loincloth. I am going to show you a second wheel that I think shows this character. No, I'll show you that later. We'll just do this whole wheel first. Okay, as was said, be looking up. What do you see on this character, fourth one, fourth position, same person?
Maybe hope. Relief.
Hope?
Relief.
Okay. Oh, I should tell you this. Forgot this part. That one was named happiness. This one is named loss. Anything, any change in life, or most of them, are first perceived as grief and as loss. So while that one was called happiness, quite happy with all of life, things change. And we move into a position of loss. When we're at loss, sometimes it's going to get worse. Things could get worse. and we move into this one at the bottom. Anyone want to guess what that is?
Despair.
Despair.
Say yes?
Despair.
Despair. Very, very close. It's called suffering, but suffering and despair are so close. Their mind is synonymous. So that's suffering. That's suffering. Okay, so we've got happiness, loss, suffering, and we were talking about the person coming up on the other side.
Hope.
And that actually is his name, Hope. What do you see about that, the individual that's changed from down here?
Well, for one thing, you see primarily the focus is on the face rather okay. than the body.
And what do you see about the face?
Oh, almost a smile, and I'm making it. So.
All right, I'm making it. I'm moving along. What were you going to say?
Well, it looks like he's climbing. So
okay. One hand over the other.
Which means that he is more active than the last two.
Yep.
The other ones were just kind of hanging on, and he's actually doing something to change his
circumstances. I can move out of this position.
Why the dark color? That bothers me.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about the color. What did he wear on the top?
Brown.
It's actually kind of a red, if you were to see the true colors. Red. This person has red. Well, that one has red and a kind of a flowing
cape,
royal robe. The next one has lost his robe, and now it just has a claw, has a kind of dressy thing on. This one only has a loincloth. The one on the far right, can you see the red kind of cloaky dress back on, and then you see the black cloak over it? Okay, this is medieval times.
Reverend,
what might black mean?
Reverend, a person of the cloth.
Okay, all right. Remember that when we talk about the wheel again. So there's an extra layer on this person. When you've been down here, gone from loss to suffering, no matter how long you stay here, and you start to come out of it, we hope, and we're going to talk about this in a minute, that there's a new understanding, that you learned something when you're down here, when we're most vulnerable. And in medieval times, who wore black?
Clergy.
The clergy and the scholars. I know something. So what I like about him, he's got this black cloak on him, and hopefully in his turning of the wheel, he's learned something about being in the suffering. Anything else about it? I think you got a lot of it. I think you saw his face, you saw his hands, his clothing. He's actually got shoes on. This guy doesn't have any shoes at all. Has shoes on. And what do shoes indicate?
Wealth.
Wealth? Okay, definitely. In medieval times, wealth. And what do shoes allow us to do?
To go places.
Travel. Move. Walk. Keep going. Okay.
His legs aren't twisted around the wheel. They're straight.
Okay, good. All right, kind of like on top so he can push himself up. Very good. I had not seen that before. This is always fun to me because people, as I said, come up with new things. Okay. And it's called hope. So we've got happiness, loss, suffering, and hope. Okay, we're just going to talk about these things for a few minutes before I show you the next slide.
Is the meaning of the woman inside?
We're going to talk about that. After we talk about the person and the wheel of life and its movement, we're going to we'll move on a little bit. Okay, so happiness is where we really all want to be, right? We really kind of like the comfortable life of being happy. It's comfortable. It's where we feel success, we feel king of the mountain, we feel on top of things. And basically, that's where we like being. It's routine, we feel good there, and that's where we like to be. That's why it's a smile that the person has. Well, loss is when things change. And my goodness, I for one do not like change. I like to know things. I like to feel somewhat in control of things. And when things change, what do we lose?
Control.
We want to return to what's normal. How many times have things started to change in your life drastically, and you just want to say, I want to go back to before I was diagnosed with. I want to go back to before our house burned down. I want to go back to my marriage when it was a good thing. I want to go back to when my significant other was alive. We want to turn around and go back. But the wheel always moves forward, counterclockwise. And that's the bad news. The clock, or the wheel moving forward, is like, for example, the children of Israel are out in the wilderness and say, I'd rather go back to Egypt, where at least I was being fed, rather than be here in the wilderness where I don't know what's going to happen. At least I knew what was bad back there. But here, I have no idea what's really going to happen to me as I continue to move on the wheel. So, we go to the wilderness. We go, and we know when we're here that it might get worse. If somebody's been given a diagnosis of cancer, if someone's been given a diagnosis of AIDS, or if someone's limb has been cut off, and they go through the treatments they may need to go through, or going through the loss of a loved one, no matter if it's divorce or death, we know that when the loss comes, things are probably going to get worse before they get better. And then, you know, it's that, oh, if only. Knowing, however, that there's no time or there's no ability to go back and change things. It's that time of brokenness. It's that time of the wheel turning towards suffering. So suffering. The Latin word, and I don't know Latin, but I heard this. The Latin word for suffering is to allow or to experience, which I think is interesting because we really don't want to allow this to happen. We don't want to go through this experience. But it's a process. We can't short circuit it. I have a hospital chaplain in Genesis Medical Center in Davenport, Iowa. So I work with a lot of people who I work in an orthopedic floor. I work on an oncology floor with cancer patients. I work with the AIDS patients. I work with patients who've had neural problems, and then a variety of other places, emergency room, and so on. And I wonder how many times I see people in this point of loss and change who are saying, I don't want to do this. And yet they know that if they're going to go around the wheel, they have to go through that process. Many of the feelings of the suffering and allowing the experience to go on is, for example, with people with grief, the feelings of unpleasantness and being vulnerable and tension and loss and anger and frustration. And I know with people in grief, when I worked with the grief group in our hospital, I could see people wanting to just not go through the grief, and people who would turn to alcohol, and people who would kind of deny that this ever happened, people who wouldn't clean out the closets for years and years and years, people who did things to try and avoid going through the grief of the loss of their loved one. And what we know about grief is you can't go around it, you can't go under it or over it, you got to go through it. And it's painful, and it's painful. Buddha said, life is suffering. Interesting. We Americans don't really want to view life as suffering. In Scott Peck's book, The Road Less Traveled, he says, in the very beginning, life is difficult. No wonder so many people read that book. We all have difficulties, and this person is saying life is difficult. But especially, as I look at a global view of humanity, I think we Americans are the most people want to be up at the top more than perhaps anybody else in the world, and somehow expect it. We expect to be there. It's part of our heritage as Americans to be on the top.
And yet, just last week in the news, I just came from America, and the happiest people in the world just did a study of the Danes.
Danes, yeah.
And why?
Yeah.
And so they were curious about that because they're looking around Denmark, you know, what could possibly make them the happiest? And so they took a study, and the thing was, they don't expect very much.
There you go. And they also drink a lot.
And it's good stuff.
So that was what makes them happy, because they don't expect anything to work out. So.
Yeah, but we expect it, right?
Well, we're way down on the list, Americans.
Or let's say their expectations are...
But are we way down the list because we expect to be there?
That's part of it, I think. No, I mean, we expect to be on top.
We expect to be up there. Yeah, we expect to be up there. And if we're not, then of course we're not happy.
Yeah, what's the deal?
Isn't life supposed to be that way?
Yeah.
Eckhart, who was a medieval mystic, said, suffering is the swiftest steed that gets us into understanding. Mm-hmm. So we're in that. I don't know about you, but I learn best, unfortunately, when I'm down here. Isn't that when we, especially as people of faith, turn most with most passion to God? So it is the quickest place to get understanding. That's when perhaps we're the most closest to the divine. However, excuse me, this is also the place, unfortunately, this is another version of the wheel. I'm really bad at this. This is another version of the wheel, which is, it is available on the internet. What do you see this fellow doing?
He's falling off.
He's reaching.
Reaching off?
He's weak.
Bear.
Is he trying to get something from down below there?
Could be. My take on it, what else?
Stripped of all layers or something.
Well, he does, I think it's the person's clothing behind the looks, he's actually naked, totally naked. If anyone's going to get off the wheel, if anyone's going to say, I can't do this anymore, I am taking my own life, this is where you get off the wheel. We all know somebody that we loved who now isn't with us anymore because they got so far into the despair of suffering that they said, I'm getting off. I'm not doing this anymore. And I think that's what that represents. If you're not going to get off, you're thinking about it. I had a subdural hematoma about 10 years ago, bleed in my brain. Was going through life with these headaches that just kept getting worse and worse and worse. My walking was affected, my handwriting. They put me in the hospital, said there's nothing wrong with you. I said, there's something wrong with me. Please, give me another test. Finally, they did an MRI and found this bleed in my brain. But what I said to myself in the suffering of this and the loss of life as I moved down the wheel is I can see why people want to check out. When you have so much pain that you can't live a minute without it, or for whatever reason, whatever anybody is experiencing, there are times you say, I can't do this. And you put your hand out and say, you know, I can't do this anymore. My husband was a pilot. He hasn't been flying for a long time, but he got in the middle of a storm when he was flying a little Cessna 150. And the storm was so bad, and the clouds were so dense that he couldn't see a thing. And he said, I literally reached for the handle of the plane because I just wanted to get out of there. Now, he said, well, that's stupid. You know, I'm not going to jump. I'd kill myself if I jumped. But it was that reaction. I want to get out of here. I don't want to do this anymore. And that's why I show you that one, is because I think that is an interesting point. Okay. Hope. Hope is, I love the scripture, I lift my eyes to the hills, from whence cometh my help. My help, my help is from the Lord. And I think, hope is where we say, I can do this. And I like, David, that you said it was a climbing look, and somebody else who said the feet looked like they were moving, because that's where you say, you know, I can do this. I can conquer this. You know, my spouse has died, and it's the worst thing that ever happened to me, but I can do this. And you've been surrounded by friends and support, and your faith has buoyed you up, and you say, and you get clothed. And David's wife, Olivia, she's not here, is a physician, and Bob is a physician. I am told that scar tissue is stronger than regular skin. Is that right?
That's right.
Okay. So scar tissue, when you've been through the fire, when you've been through the suffering, and we talked about that black cloak that was around that person, you get stronger. Just like scar tissue is stronger skin than regular skin, when you've been through something, you have more, and we talked about that black thing being education and understanding, and you have more of that. So then as you're saying, I can do this, I can get better, I've got things, and that person then is then looking up to happiness. I can get there again. I can get to that balance. Now, I find it interesting that on this one, and I'll use this one before I go back to the other one, happiness is looking down at loss. And this is kind of, I think, the pessimistic one, the pessimistic wheel of life as opposed to the other one. This one is saying, I know I'm not going to stay here. Is that the idea you get? You know, I'm looking, okay, I like where I'm at, but this isn't going to stay forever. While this one, I don't know if you remember.
Oh, yeah, when you think about it, the hope guy there, he has a lot more time being hopeful. you know, all headings off the north pole are 180 degrees.
Uh-huh.
Well, the guy in the happiness position, happiness is fleeting.
Is fleeting.
Very fleeting. Hope guy's got a lot of time there, a lot of degrees on the wheel.
Okay, I see that. Two of them and he just has one. I get you. Okay, yeah. Good point.
Also, sometimes when we're so happy, we're smug over the people who are less happy. So on the other wheel, they're looking toward, maybe perhaps, and this one too looks smug, you know, looking down at the other people who are suffering. And you got to be careful about that because you too are going to turn on the wheel.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But you hope that the person who's been down and back up has gained some of that wisdom and empathy.
Yeah. Though I think that is our hope for all of us, is when we're down there, we learn something. I also listened to Fifth Steps for an addiction unit we have in our hospital with the behavioral science unit. And there are times when someone will come in and do a fifth step with me, and I'll say, they'll tell me their story, and I'll say, how many times have you been here? Because I hear their story, and it sounds like they've been with me. Oh, 5 times. What have you learned this time that you didn't know the last time? And there are some people who you know they're going to, you just unfortunately feel like they're going to be back here a sixth time, they're going to be back here a seventh time. Because when they're down here, they haven't learned anything. So hopefully as you go around this wheel, you get that black cloak. I've learned something. And when you get back up to happiness, it's a different normal. It's a new normal. It's a different normal. It's, I'm in a different place in my happiness. I'm in a different place in my happiness. I'm in a different place with new understanding. And perhaps maybe the smile gets less smug. I don't know. Okay, questions about anything you see up there before we go to the middle character? Or observation? Sure.
Well, all the characters are strong enough to hold on.
They're all strong enough to hold on. Okay.
There's
if they choose to.
There's none of them that really are missing an arm or a leg.
Right.
Or, you know, they all have the tools they need to stay on the wheel. And,
mm-hmm. So you're saying they have the ability to keep going.
Yeah, they have the tools that they need to stay on the wheel.
Okay. Anything else?
Is there any significance between 6 spokes and 4 spokes?
The other one only had 4, didn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
But you know what? Any answer's right here.
So far we haven't talked about helping, because to get out of this sort of thing you need.
We will talk about
yourself.
That. And that's a good point.
That's the middle person.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, are we ready to go on to the middle person?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Who is it? What is it? What's it doing? What do you see?
Turning.
I didn't hear that.
Turning the wheel.
Okay, turning the wheel.
It looks bigger.
Okay.
The person looks bigger.
Bigger? Okay.
Could be like
powerful?
A mother or, older figure.
Older figure? Okay.
What are the glasses?
In control.
I'm thinking about
glasses?
To me, it looks like glasses.
It kind of does look like glasses.
Is that a blindfold?
It's a either a blindfold. When you see the picture, it's actually a blindfold with ridges in it.
Oh, okay.
Time. So if it's an individual who's bigger and stronger and wearing a blindfold, what do you think?
Life itself, or the nature of life, or a God figure. It could be, but I would think more the nature of life itself, that it just does that.
Okay.
Or it's a female figure.
Looks female.
Yeah. Looks female. Okay.
Fate.
And for some reason, I was thinking of wisdom right away, you know, in the cathedrals in Europe, and you know, when you see that.
And in ancient Hebrew, to my understanding, and I don't know if there's any Hebrew scholars in here, that wisdom was female, feminine?
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense.
Right?
Sense.
So, okay.
Makes sense.
Make sense? I thought about that. I'm reading World Without End, which is taking place in the 1400s, and no clergy in the 1400s thought there was any wisdom in any female at all. So I'm really, you know, but I think Hebrews had perhaps a different understanding of that. But anyways, I've been toying with that as I was looking at this today. So okay, so we got a figure who's larger, who's blindfolded, and who's, do you think she, we'll call her she, is turning the wheel?
Like
this one, it almost looks like she's holding the wheel, but I want to show you this one again because it's a little bit, I think, better in this one. What's she doing there?
She turned it the other way.
She's turning the wheel. It does look like that, doesn't it?
She looks benevolent to the person at the bottom.
Okay, in this one, she is looking at the one on the bottom. But remember, she's got a blindfold on. So if you can't see the person, what can you do?
Hear. Listen.
Hear the person, perhaps? Hear the cries of one crying in the wilderness? I don't know.
When I think of a blindfolded figure, I think about justice.
Yeah. Lady Justice.
And the role of the blindfold might be that everybody gets treated the same.
Yeah. That,
you know, we're all on the same boat or on the same wheel together.
Okay. And I think you probably hit it on the head, though. Of course, there are so many interpretations to this that we can, that all of them can be right. But I think that's what the wheel is, what it is being said here is the wheel is turning. In the other picture, it looked like she was listening to the person who was suffering, hearing their cries. This one, it looks like she's looking to the person who is moving up in hope. And she is supposedly in this, as I understand it, turning the wheel, but without really consideration. Now, I'm sure it depends on the theology of all of us and where we are on our journey and how we view God and how we view things that happen to us. Now, if this was a very different, perhaps, theological group, one might say, oh, you know, God plans everything in my life and I am just, everything has been planned by God. In the view, I believe, of this artist, and in my view, life turns, and things are going to happen. As a hospital chaplain, I was called down into the emergency room about 12:30 early one morning, and a gentleman had been riding a motorcycle at 75 miles an hour with no helmet and had been drinking and drove into the back of a parked truck. And his hysterical, overwrought father said, looked at me and said, why did God do this to my son? Now, even as a novice chaplain, when I had this experience, I knew you didn't say, let me talk to you about the theology of this. Do you really think that God did this to your son when he was driving a motorcycle, had no helmet on, was drinking and ran in the back? You don't say anything, you know, of theological, but this person is just in severe shock and grief. But it's interesting how as soon as something happens, we need to blame someone, and many times the easiest target is why did God have this happen to my son? And all of us have been through a time when we just ask that question. Somebody runs over their child as they're backing out of the driveway. Someone hits somebody who's on a bike. Someone gets the diagnosis of an illness that they weren't anticipating. And why did God let this happen? Or why am I suffering like this? Or why is this happening to me? And so this figure, I believe, is saying life happens. Life happens. Sometimes when someone has more time to think about their illness, for example, when I work with cancer patients, and someone would say, I don't know why God is making me suffer like this. And I let them tell their story because I believe everybody has their own wisdom. As they tell their story, they figure out what they need and where they're going. But sometimes I will ask them, do you really think God caused you to have this cancer? And there's usually a pause, and then oftentimes the person says, no, I really don't. I say, well, tell me about your faith and how God is part of your journey. And then we get into the theology and the practicality and the journey that they're on. Okay. She doesn't look vengeful, does she? She doesn't look like she's causing anything. And in the picture, even less so. Now, what do you know about a wheel? We'll go on to the wheel now. What do you know about a wheel? Some of you had physics and some of you...
It turns.
It turns. What else do you know about a wheel?
It has to be strong.
It has to be strong.
It has
okay.
an axle.
It has it at what?
Center.
It has a center. Some of you are old enough to have been, I haven't seen these in playgrounds lately, but think about this big, a little bit bigger than this, where you could jump on and then somebody would run around and you kind of, you know, one of those whirly things.
Merry-go-round.
Right. Do they still have them? I hate those things. I have motion sickness, so I hate those things. So I didn't go on them very often. But if I did go on them, I would never stay here. Why?
Too fast.
It goes way too fast. So where would I want to go?
The center,
in the middle. And that's why I think whoever made this, used this as kind of that wonderful teaching metaphor, is in the very middle, isn't it called the axis? Where the things turn around it, that centering place. And what I love about centering prayer, and that title, is you go to the center. You go to that place that's quiet, that doesn't move. And I believe that in this, what they're saying with this, and the fact that it's a wheel, is where do we need to go when life's happening? When all this stuff is happening? To the quiet place. To the place that doesn't move. To the place that's always the same. So, this wheel, then, also teaches us something else. We don't know happiness unless we probably have something to compare it with in suffering. And where those two meet, happiness and suffering, we do find what's real. Happiness, of course, is fleeting, right? Mm-hmm. But joy, as people of faith, we know that, is so much different than that fleeting happiness. And the only place we can find that joy is where happiness and suffering come together in the center where we find God. And loss kind of counterbalances with hope. And the only way, and some of you so beautifully noted that the person was kind of climbing up on the side of hope, taking action. And I think the only way we as people of faith know that we can move from loss to suffering to hope is coming to the center and finding faith. And that's where we say, okay, I won't be down here forever. I don't need to get off the wheel, because as I move toward the center, as I find my relationship with God, if I find people in the middle who will help me, who will support me, I will be able to deal with the loss and hope, because I've moved in toward faith. And of course, all of that is encircled in kind of a bowl of love. I don't know about you, but I could not get through life without the people who love me. And I would not want to participate in life without being able to love other people. I mean, one of the reasons I'm a chaplain, we all have reasons we have our jobs, or reasons we had our jobs, is because we feel like we make a difference. One of the reasons I love being a chaplain is because I can sit at the bedside of someone who has been given a terminal illness or is dying, and I can say, tell me about your life. Tell me about what you did, who you are. And they start telling their stories. And as they tell their stories, and I did this with a gentleman who was in his 90s, and as he told his story, the covers came down from, he had him up to his chin and he was scowling. As he told his story, the arms came out and the animation on the face. He had been president of a bank, he had worked through the depression, he had married his children. He talked about his children with such joy and pride. And at the end of this conversation, I'm leaving out some of the details, he looked at me and said, thank you for listening to an old man reminisce. And then he said, I've had a good life, haven't I? And I said, yes, Mr. Smith, you've had a very good life. I think we all have to be able to look back, mm-hmm. or look in the present and say, I hope, making the world a better place. And I studied this once with a group. We said, okay, what in life makes a difference? What in life makes a difference? And we studied things for 2 years. I don't know why it took us so long to become wise, but it did. And at the end of this 2 years, what we decided as a group was the only way we really make a difference is one person walking alongside of another person, being present to that person on the journey. And I think what this says is that in that circle of love and connection where we have joy and faith makes a difference. One of the examples that was about this was that Mother Teresa, of course, we now know there's a whole another chapter of Mother Teresa in the despair that she went through. But she left happiness and was willing to go through the loss and stick with the suffering to really make a difference one-on-one with these people as she worked with people who were dying, just giving them a cup of cold water and cleaning their face and wiping their brow and, you know, developing then the Sisters of Mercy. But she knew that that the only place that it really mattered was in the middle of that circle. Even of course, and I guess I love the fact that this new writing about her has come out because it makes her more human. I don't feel like she's such a saint, that she's one of us and walked in with these situations and struggles that we all have as we journey through life. Questions at this point? Responses.
Wait, when you had the picture up there.
Oh, you put it back?
Yeah.
Which one?
The original one. Okay. Just to note that the center of the wheel, the hub of the wheel, is right in the center of the figure of light.
Thank you.
Or
yeah. And actually pretty close to her heart. I mean, I don't think her heart's right here. But, you know, maybe she can't lift it any higher. But at the, and that is a point.
Yeah.
And absolutely. In fact, one of the things that's usually brought up, it's in her center.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, very good.
It's by her belly button, which is a connection.
Uh-huh. I love that.
Connection.
Yeah, yeah.
A connection to life. And it's, oh, I love that. I love that. That's even better than the heart. Umbilical cord, life. Giving life. Connections, birth.
In Hebrew, that was bowels of compassion. One's sympathy, one's was in the guts.
Oh, that's good too.
Throughout the compassion.
Yeah, I feel your pain in in my great.
Jean, do you use this as patience somehow?
I haven't ever used it with patients.
I mean, it would be wonderful. Some people respond better visually. If this was available at some point, and then as they go, I deal a lot with grief and loss and death and so forth. It would be wonderful to have that.
I could go over to, we have a Gilda's house, we have a very fortunately have a Gilda's house in our town. I could go and offer that. I mean, it's the sort of thing that really takes a class,
right.
Because we all kind of help each other look at it. But yeah, so I've never done it individually with patients, but I think that's a very good idea, thank you. Why do you think there's trees here? I mean, every artist puts in something and everything, this is a metaphor, and why do you think there's trees?
They're being rooted, I mean, that's a
problem. Rooted, okay.
And growth.
Growth, love that.
Life, tree,
tree
of
life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. I didn't know this. When I taught it once, somebody said to me, you could also do this, that this is summer. No. Yeah, summer.
Spring,
fall.
Summer,
fall, winter, and spring, which makes sense. And then the person said to me, do you know when trees do the most part of their growth? And I would have said, spring. They're budding forth. They said, no, the actual work they need to do in order to bud and spring is done in the winter. And that fits the metaphor, because where do we grow most? Internally and in with our faith and in our journey is when we're, unfortunately, at the bottom.
I'm just thinking about the amount of time for each of these topics and thinking, well, if they're for 25% of our time, we should be happy. And of course, I think that you're right. As Americans, we think that we should be happy 90% of the time or 75. But if you look at this one, you look at only a sixth of the your time.
As was pointed out,
Then the rest of the time you're going through loss and suffering and hope. And so it's a real paradigm shift, actually, from thinking that we are entitled to be happy, and if we're not, there's something wrong with us. I think that thought is very prevalent in a lot of people. There's something wrong with us if we are not sitting on top of the world and happy most of the time.
Either wrong with us if you are that kind of person that turns anger in, or anger at the world for not being fair to me.
Hopefully this also gives us more, everybody's on the wheel. And we're on, to me, it seems like we must be on a variety of wheels. You may be on it. You may be up at the top in your where you work. And in your personal life, you might be right down here. I mean, so we can probably be on several wheels at a time. With our children, we're at one place. With our spouse, we might be another. Work, we might be another. Health, we might be another. So we're probably on multiple wheels, and yet they all affect one another. But I think the other thing that this teaches me is that I'm on this wheel, and every encounter I have, I bring my own wheel. But then I got to remember that everybody else is on the wheel too. And do I know where they are on the wheel unless I hear their story? As a hospital chaplain, my job is to hear someone's story. And only when I hear their story do I know if there's a way that I can be of service to this person, because they let me know what I need. I'm not a chaplain who goes in with my own agenda. I let the patients let me know what they need by hearing their story. But it gives us more compassion. Dave, were you going to say something?
Yeah. The whole idea of a wheel going round and continuing to go around reminds me also of Sunday night, for those of you that were here, Soul Purpose did the story of Lazarus, and after Lazarus was brought to life, the group talked about what might have happened with a big party. But none of that party would have happened if there hadn't been the death. And so there's a recognition that the hope isn't possible unless you have the fall as well.
The fall. And isn't this the whole story of the Bible, really?
Yeah.
You know? As it's showing in the, did you have something? You put your hand up, I think you're raising your hand. Very true, absolutely true, yeah.
Tom Brokaw, in his book, This Generation, quotes a soldier from World War II who said his combat experience wasn't worth a plugged nickel, but I wouldn't trade it for $1 million. I think it relates to that idea that he had to go through that to see the value of his life.
And when we look back in our lives, aren't they times that we've been down at the bottom where we really do say, think of the time. I wouldn't trade my subdural hematoma for anything. Why? Because I have a better understanding of all the patients who have a hole drilled in their head. We're in quite a unique group when people say, all I need is another hole in my head. Well, I have one. But I can empathize with my patients who are scared to go through that surgery or have a swelling in their brain or whatever. And being a patient gives you a way better understanding as a chaplain to be on one side of the bed if you've been in the bed. So I wouldn't trade for anything besides that my migraine headaches disappeared. So, there was another blessing in it. Anything else? Any other reactions to this before we go off to lunch?
Somebody told me yesterday that a person said to her, it says in the Bible, God won't test us more than we can bear. But she said, I think he does. And so that's we get to the point where we realize we need him. Mm-hmm. And then he will give us the extra.
So does this wheel go along with the theology that you just mentioned? Is it God who's testing us, or do we just live in a human world where things happen to us? If you happen to be in the Katrina situation, did God do that so he could teach us something? Or did it happen because we live in this imperfect world? Or do some of us get cancer because who knows what we eat or what we drink or what we breathe? And we get it because we live in an imperfect world, we're human beings.
Yeah, that's what I believe, basically. Yeah, but anyways,
Yeah,
the problem with that theology would encourage us to have less faith. Mm-hmm. Sure. But that God is testing us.
Then we would have less faith or more faith?
Well, we would have less. Our strategy would be to have less because we know God's not going to test us.
Yeah, yeah. Or if someone's just turning the wheel, what am I, so what can I do about it?
Yeah.
But as David pointed out, it looks like on the side of hope we can do something.
But there's a difference to say whether God wills it or allows it, and you can say, when you are in this, it's happened because we live in this imperfect world. I don't believe that God sends us the evil and illness. I definitely don't believe that. I feel very strongly about it when people think God sent me this or that, the other thing.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you are down there, and sometimes people come and say, I need hope, and when people say to me, this is more than I can bear, then I say, tell God, this is enough.
There you go. And in that one wheel where the wisdom was looking down, I think that's the place where the person is saying, what about this? Help me. I've got to get out of this. I need strength. I need help. I need somebody to help me, move the wheel, climb up, be present to me. Yeah. And I do think that these things, I wouldn't say that God does these things to it, but I would say, my goodness, what am I going to learn, the fact that I'm going through this?
Right.
What am I going to learn from this? How am I going to feel that I've gotten the cloak of wisdom as I'm moving up in home? Okay, one more thing. I want you to get to lunch.
Okay. There's a book that's helped me a lot called Necessary Losses by Judith Bjorst. And it's her premise that from the time we're born, come out of the womb, that we have loss in our life. That's the nature of life. And that
life is suffering.
The necessary part is that that loss then opens a space for something else to come into our life.
And that would be true of this. And I guess my challenge and my question for you is, okay, if this is a good metaphor for the journey that we're on, what helps you get to the center? And I think, you know, all of us are going to answer that question differently so that we can cope with the turning of the wheel. What takes you to the center? And of course, for many of us here, coming to Holden is one of them. Mm-hmm. But for all of us, it's going to be a little different, but to challenge you to find that and to move toward it. And if you're visual people like I am, to take this with you, it was my prayer as I got ready for today and as I did my devotions this morning, the people who could perhaps use this in some way would come and take it with them, and if not use it for yourself, be able to share it with somebody else or get it off the internet or whatever, to be a blessing to you. So I thank you for coming, and I hope in some small way, in fact I said to somebody this morning, if even one person takes something away from this that blesses them, then it's always worth it to me to share this. So thank you so much, and I hope this blesses you.
Thank you.